Okay, so I just want to start with a thought that sort of struck me this morning, and that is, it's a two-part thought, and then we'll go straight into the halachas. The thought is as follows. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I took you out of Mitzrayim, he says, look, I took you out B'chodesh Ha'aviv. Rashi points out, according to Chazal, why is it B'chodesh Ha'aviv in the spring time specifically? So Rashi points out that the springtime, it's not too cold, it's not too hot, it's a pleasant time to go out, the sun is shining, it's a rebirth, so Hashem is as though smiling when he took us out of Mitzrayim. So we should feel that not only did Hashem take us out at a time that's, not only did he take us out of Mitzrayim, but he took us out of Mitzrayim when it's sort of pleasant. It reminds me of when Yosef was sold down to Mitzrayim years before, the Pasuk points out that he was sold to with spice sellers. It's like you're going down to be sold into slavery, but at least Hashem, you know, makes it smell nice. So here too, we've been in slavery for 210 years, but at least when we go out, you know, at least it's sunny and it's pleasant. But if you look a few parashiyos later, the pasuk says again, Shamar es chodesh ha'aviv. You have to be shomer that remember our lunar cycle and our solar cycle don't match. It's only when we make ibur years, when we make leap years, to maintain that Pesach always stay b'chodesh ha'aviv, meaning there's a halacha that you must add leap months or leap days, leap months, the second other, to ensure that Pesach will always stay in the spring, in the solar spring. Why? Shamar es chodesh ha'aviv. Why is it so important that Pesach has to be in the spring? If we would just follow the lunar calendar, we wouldn't always end up in the spring. I'm wondering if it's the same reason, because Hashem's telling us, not only did I take you out, but I want every Pesach, I want you to remember that Pesach is a nice, pleasant experience. So, with that in mind, if we're going to drive ourselves batty and come into the Seder ragged, there's no way we'll be able to fulfill this halacha of Shamor es Chodesh Ha'aviv. And of course, the ideal of sitting as a Ben or Bas Chorin at the Seder, which is certainly the appropriate mode and model which we are supposed to. So hopefully I'll provide some guidelines that might be able to ease to facilitate being makpid not just on Hilchas Chametz, but also makpid on the halacha of Shomer es Chodesh Ha'aviv, on enjoying the Seder, on enjoying the, to whatever extent we can, the weeks in leading up to the Seder. Okay, what I want to do today is divide up the shir into two parts. The first part will be the house. The second part will be the kitchen. First part will be cleaning the house. Second part will be kashering the kitchen. Before we do that, we have to realize that there are numerous things that we do when we get rid of chametz. I'm going to give one or two words of introduction so we can understand the practical applications more clearly. When it comes to chametz, there's bittul chametz that we say with our mouths, kol chamir v'chamir, all the chametz that I have in my reshus, I make it hefker, I make it batel ka'afra da'ara, like the earth, like the dirt of the ground. Separately from that, we do a bedika, and we do a beer, physical destruction. Now, the question is, which one is the real getting rid of chametz? Or if I could ask that differently, which one is da'araisa, and which one is da'rabanan? And there's a very unusual answer, specifically by chametz. The halach is as follows. Midoraisa, I'm not allowed to own chametz. We'll talk about eating chametz the second half of this year. Now we're going to talk about the isra of Bal Yiraya, Bal Yimatzeh of owning chametz. I'm not allowed to own chametz. There are two ways I could get rid of chametz. I could just do bittul, say, this is hefker, I don't own it anymore. It's ownerless. I consider it meaningless. Or I could actually get rid of it. The Ran, one of the Rishonim says that either one that you do gets rid of your Torah obligation to get rid of chametz. That means if you just do bittul, you say, I don't own any chametz, you declared it hefker, you don't own chametz, you didn't violate only chametz. Or, if you don't do any bittul, but you clean and make sure you don't own any chametz, so you destroyed all your chametz, you also don't own any chametz. You're fine. However, each one has a problem, which we'll talk about for a moment, and therefore we have to do the second one as well. Let me explain. If a person just does bittul, so you say, I hereby declare that my chametz is meaningless. I hereby declare my chametz is hefker. Well, if you really, I had a shayla once, not to me, to a friend of mine. A friend of mine had a shayla that somebody got engaged to a daughter of a conservative family. She herself was a balas tshuva, but her family was conservative. And they kept kosher, they kept Pesach, on whatever level they did, but they also had a very extensive liquor collection. So, if you have an extensive liquid collection, which is all chametz, it was probably not sold. I don't think they sold their chametz. They didn't eat chametz. They only had matzah. But they owned all the thousands of dollars worth of wines, worth of liquor, which the father-in-law wanted to give his son-in-law the entire liquid collection when they were getting married. And till the son-in-law realized it was all chametz shavar had passed out from previous years, and all had to be, he couldn't take it. It all had to be thrown out, theoretically. But wait. If you just do bittel, you say, it's all hefker, hefker, I don't own anything. Yeah, but sometimes the Rishonim are concerned, if you say something is hefker, I don't care about it. Is that really true? Is that really true? Do you really mean it when you say, I don't really care about it, it's all meaningless, it's all hefker? You know, if you have $3,000 worth of, you know, fine bourbon and whiskey and scotch, it's hard to say you don't really care about it. So Chachamim were concerned that maybe when you do a bittel with your mind or your mouth, you say, I don't need it. You weren't really serious. So what did they say? Do a second step. Get rid of your chametz by cleaning for chametz and destroying it. That's why if I just have bittel, it's not enough. I also have to go ahead and do bedika. On the inverse, let's say I clean for chametz, and this is going to be a very important kula in how, when we learn the how we have to clean our houses. Let's say I clean for chametz. I don't do a bittel. I clean for chametz. I get rid of all the chametz. There's nothing here. So why isn't that enough? Why do I also have to do a bittel? You'll tell me, because you missed some chametz. You guys, there are some crumbs in the house. Right? Everybody knows that when you have a wall that goes at that vertex where the wall hits the floor, there could be lots. In your dining room, there are lots of crumbs there, right? Says the Gemara, that can't be a problem. You don't have to be worried that you missed some crumbs, because perurim, crumbs, are automatically batel. Pirurim are not important. Crumbs do not matter. You could write that down. Crumbs do not matter. Crumbs do not matter. Therefore, the Gemara says, if you are worried that the reason that you, maybe you're doing a bedika and you're worried maybe you missed a crumb, that's not important. There must be some other reason that we want you to do a bittel even after you decide to clean and to do a bedika. And the Gemara says that we're worried that maybe you're going to find some rugalach underneath the couch cushion. Doesn't say it in those words, but we're worried that even if you do a bedik, you might find something which you could assume you got rid of, but when you find it, what's going to be your immediate reaction? Well, it's supposed to be, oh my gosh, I found a rugal under the... Rugal, singular? Rugal, okay, machlokas. I found a ruggle underneath the cushion. I have to destroy it. But if you pause for a moment, at that point, you might violate chametz. So what do we say? Even though you clean for Pesach, do bittel. Say, I hereby declare everything is batel and is hefker and is ownerless. So that even if you end up finding on chametz that ruggle underneath the cushion, it was already declared ownerless and you're still okay. So what we come out with, and this is all the introduction before we get to the practical part, that was the introduction of why we do need both bittel and bedika. It's not enough to have one or the other. We need both. Now, when is the mitzvah bedikas chametz? It's the night before Pesach. But as you all know, you could join me in laughing. That is, of course, a big farce. The bedikas chametz starts whenever you might. I don't want to make anyone feel good or bad, so it either started or it will start shortly. Bedikas chametz, it's within, whenever we clean for chametz, that is the mitzvah bedikas chametz. So you could have in mind, whenever you're doing whatever you might be doing, that is all to fulfill the mitzvah of bedikas chametz. It's true, the final step will be on the night before Pesach. You're not going to use a feather and a candle for the 2 weeks before Pesach, but everything that we do is to fulfill the mitzvah of bedikas chametz. And we could pat ourselves on the back that we're doing mitzvahs as we clean, but let's talk about what we have to clean. Now, kula number one, besides I mentioned crumbs, let me clarify that point. Kula number one. There's a dispute how big chametz has to be in order to violate owning chametz. Right? We clean our houses. I'm not talking about the kitchen yet. I'm talking about the rest of our house. We clean our house so that we don't violate owning chametz. How much chametz does there have to be to violate owning chametz? Most of poskim assume that it's a kezias. Okay, but there's a rule that we have. Chatzi shiur aser min ha-Torah. Even smaller than a regular shiur, a kezias, might still be aser. Might still be aser daraisa. But it's not as significant. But listen to the following. In order to be considered violating oni chametz, it has to be food. Food is something that you would eat. If something's dirty, for example, it is not on a table, it's not in a bin, it's on the floor, and it's less than a kezias, I have a double whammy. Something, this is the rule, this is what the Shulchan Aruch Paskin, something that's less than a kezias, and it's on the floor, in other words, it's dirty, you do not violate owning chametz. You do not violate bal yirah, which means any crumbs of chametz on the floor, anywhere in your house, does not have to be cleaned for Pesach. Do you realize what we just did? We just made that you don't have to check anywhere. We'll talk about the kitchen and dining room again in the second half of this year. But in the rest of your house, any place on the floor, yes, I do advise that you do sweep or vacuum at least once, but anywhere there's a crumb, and it's on the floor. It's less than a kezias. A kezias is at, you know, an olive at best, and it's on the floor, it's dirty, or it's going to get dirty, you don't have to clean it. So that means any corners, you see stuff there, you can just look at it from a distance, smile and wave. You don't have to get down on your knees. You don't have to take a toothpick or tweezers. None of that. None of that. Why? Because two things. It's smaller than a kezias, and it's dirty. No need to clean. And now, again, if you want to clean it, just don't blame it on Hashem. Blame it on, you know, spring cleaning. That's, you know, that's your prerogative, of course. My mother, here you don't see it. If you see windows, sometimes windows have, besides the windowsill on the bottom, on top of the window, there's sometimes also like a molding. So when I grew up, my mother, that was always my job because I was tall. So I had to vacuum on top of that molding 9 feet high. We had an old house, so it was tall, like 10-foot ceilings. So the molding's 9 feet high, and I would always joke with my mother, like, Mom, I got all the Cheerios off that, you know, that molding 9.5 feet up. So that's not for Pesach. With that in mind, we could come to books or svarim. Do you have to clean books or svarim? So you see, if you have a crumb on the floor, that is dirty. If you have a crumb in svarim, there, you know, would you eat a crumb if you found a crumb? No, you probably wouldn't eat a crumb in svarim. So the Chazon Ish said that you should take your svarim and brush them out. Most people around here don't do that. Most people rely on Rav Moshe Feinstein. He says, no, svarim, you don't have to worry about the crumbs. You don't have to do bedika. You don't have to, but you shouldn't bring svarim to the table. Svarim that might at any point during the year may possibly even have had any connection to food during the year, you could use them. They could be read. You have books, magazines, Mishpacha magazines from Hanukkah. That's fine. But don't bring it to the dining room table. Don't bring it to the kitchen table. That's going to be, again, we'll talk about koshering the kitchen. We're going to have different parameters. That'll be in the second half of this year. We're still talking about the rest of the house. Okay. Which rooms in my house do I have to clean? Which parts of my house? So the halakha is very clear that only those rooms that you might go to, or those cubbies, or those cabinets, or those drawers that you might go to during mealtime are the only places that we're concerned that you might have brought chametz. So if you have a closet that you keep, well, again, let's assume there are no children in the house for now. If you have a closet where you keep boots and you don't go there during mealtime, so you could assume that there's no chametz there, and that closet, just don't even look in, don't even open. You could open it on Pesach, not before Pesach. If you have an attic, if you have a guest room, if you never bring food upstairs, and you have a guest room upstairs or downstairs in the basement, there's never food that goes down there, you don't have to clean, check anything in that guest room. Drawers. If you have a drawer where you have a sweater, well, sometimes if it's chilly during a meal, you'll get a sweater from a drawer. If you have a drawer that you keep stuff in, you keep, socks, you never get socks in the middle of a meal. So if you have a sock drawer, you don't have to look in that drawer for Pesach, because you never look for socks in the middle of a meal, unless you're the type of person who gets cold in the middle of the meal on Sukkot, you want to put on an extra sock, pair of socks. Okay, so in your house, you do have to check the sock drawer. Now, this rule applies only if there are no children or pets in the house. Once you have kids and all of this point falls away, because there's no, you can never, you never be sure where they may or may not. So then once a person has children that are in the house, whether children, grandchildren, guests that are, you know, comfortable in using the house, and kids bring things to and fro, so then you really do want to check all kinds of places, even though you don't want chametz to go there, even though the official rule is no chametz above the first floor. But if you and I know that after Purim they got a really good hamantash that they really like, then it's going to end its way somewhere into their underwear drawer on the second floor because they don't want you to find it. So it's worthwhile for you to find it before Pesach because that would be a violation of Baal Yirah. Okay, one other point of where to look for Pesach is, what about a place that you can't access? For example, behind the refrigerator, behind the oven, do you have to move the refrigerator, move the oven, move any dressers? So the halacha is as follows. There's a mishnah that says that chametz shenafla alav mapolas. Mapolas is, I don't want to say an avalanche, but let's say there's a building, falls down, I have a box of chametz in there. I have a box of Wheaties underneath that those runes. So I own it, it's mine, it's chametz, Pesach is coming. Says the Mishnah, if you can't access it, even though you own it, even though you, excuse me, you know it's there, but since you can't access it, you don't have to worry about it. Don't have to worry about it. Therefore, halacha l'maisa, any chametz behind the refrigerator, any chametz behind the oven, let it stay there. You can wave from a distance, smile at it, that's all. You don't have to clean that chametz. If you want to be extra super duper careful, you're welcome to spray some. Windex is a great thing to have. Windex has ammonia. We'll talk about this soon. Windex has ammonia. Ammonia, I think, is poison. Don't try drinking it. And if you spray, if you want to spray from the back, if you're worried that there might be some stuff behind the fridge, behind the oven, really, just leave it there. If you want, just take some Windex. And it's ammonia-ized, and no one's going to eat it. That will be sufficient. Yes?
Yeah, if you were saying right before this point that if, let's say, somebody, a guest or a child, would hit a cake somewhere in a file drawer.
Right.
If you're saying bitul chametz, that nothing, everything, you're mamakal, you're chametz, why do you have to...
The answer is that even though you did bitul, we're still concerned that one concern which I mentioned earlier is that you might find it on Pesach and not get rid of it right away. And at that moment, you will violate only chametz. And another concern, which I didn't mention earlier, which the Rishonim are concerned with, is that if you do find something on Pesach, you might come to eat it. If it's if you happen to be, I'm a sucker for licorice. If I see licorice anywhere from, it doesn't matter how old or how hard it is, if I see licorice, I will eat it. So if I'm going through I'm cleaning out my car for Pesach this year, and I see a piece of licorice underneath a bench that somebody must have left there, you know, from the Hanukkah party, I will probably eat it. So if that happens to you on Pesach, that's not a good thing. So therefore, Chacham said, you have to check, even though you do a bitul, you have to check. One reason that I said before that you might, when you find it, you might not get rid of it right away. And secondly, this reason that you might come to eat it, and therefore it's asur mitzvah, you require mitzvah to get rid of, to prevent that chash that you might come to eat it. That's the second reason. Okay. Now, let's talk about bathrooms, let's talk about toiletries. So one of the parameters of chametz is food. If it's not food, it's not chametz. But let me explain that. In order to be defined as chametz, in order to be defined as food, it doesn't mean that I would eat it, it means that a kelev would eat it. If a kelev would eat it, if a dog would eat it, that means it's food, it's chametz, it has to be removed. If it's nifsal, pasal, me'achilas kelev, even a dog wouldn't eat it, then that would not be considered chametz. You don't have to clean for that. And that's the solution. If there ever is a crevice, let's say, that you can't get to, even if halachically you may not really be required to get into that crevice because it's inaccessible, but you just don't want to, you could get it, but you don't want to have to work and get, you could just take a spray can. It could be Windex. It could be some other caustic cleanser. But Windex is great because, again, it's not so caustic, and it's not so caustic with an AU, not an O. And it's not so dangerous. I mean, don't drink it, but it's not as it's not going to burn anything. Some Windex, spray it. The ammonia will make it nifsal me'achilas kelev, and therefore you don't have to be worried about owning that chametz. When we talk about toiletries, so here we have a very important tshuva of Rav Moshe, who talked about the following. Rav Moshe lived on the Lower East Side, right near the Bowery. And in the Bowery, there were lots of people who were drunkards. And Rav Moshe noted that there were people, unfortunately, the serious drinkers, when they weren't able to find liquor to drink, they would find other liquids that contained alcohol, like mouthwash, but that's something you really would put in your mouth, but even things that are like cologne or perfume, they would distill it, and then they would drink the alcohol. And that's, he said, was, I don't say common, but there were people in the Bowery where he lived, you know, near the Lower East Side, that people would distill alcohol to drink the alcohol. Based on that, Rav Moshe says the following. Anything that's a solid that can't be distilled, it's not food. A box, a bar of deodorant, that's not a food. A bar of soap, that's not a food. It's not even a food for a dog. And therefore, it could have wheat germ, it could have oat bran, it could have cream of wheat, whatever it has, no problem, no worries, because it's not food and it can't be distilled to make into food. If you have a pill that's swallowed, that's a capsule, that's a caplet, that also is not chametz, even if it has some kind of yeast in it, because that's not food. However, says Rav Moshe, anything that has liquid alcohol, and since it's a liquid alcohol, a grain alcohol, like ethyl alcohol, if it has a grain alcohol and it's liquid, then you have to be worried that maybe somebody in a desperate, or some desperate drunkard might distill it and extract the liquid alcohol that is grain alcohol. That we do have to be concerned of. So, when you go through your medicine cabinets, anything that is solid form, don't even look at the ingredient panel. Anything that is liquid form, then you have to check if it has an alcohol. If it has an alcohol, it should be avoided. It should be put away. If it doesn't have an alcohol, then no worries. When it comes to 10 seconds, if it comes to shampoos, when it comes to conditioners, that is not, those usually don't have alcohols. Even if they do have grain substances like wheat germ or other kinds of grain products in the shampoos, conditioners, soaps, that's, again, it's not fit for consumption of a dog, and it's not an alcohol, and therefore you could just leave that for Pesach. Some people have the custom not to use it on Pesach, but you could leave it in the shower stall, leave the conditioner, the shampoo there, and use a different one, mikra, then you could use it also. That's as far as toiletries. Yes?
A spray? Is a spray considered solid?
A spray?
Like spray deodorant.
Spray deodorants do have alcohol in them. I don't know if it's ethyl alcohol. I'll have to check that up. Not sure. Thank you. Okay. Let's finish off. So basically... Yeah, please. I don't know the answer. That's why I have to. Sure. It's a liquid inside. Right. I don't know the answer to the question. That's yeah. So I'll have to check that out. So basically, if we want to clean everything outside of the kitchen, which we'll get to in a minute, the second half, so we'll sweep the floors. You look in the drawers that you visit during the meals, medicine cabinets, you just remove the liquids that have alcohol. Obviously, you have to go through handbags, pockets of clothing. I don't know about you, but I oftentimes have granola bars in my jacket pockets. If you have kids, then even if you don't put granola bars, they might put granola bars or things much worse in your pockets. So it is important to check pockets. But again, we're not looking for specks of crumbs. Crumbs, the Gemara told us explicitly, are automatically batel. They're insignificant. We're talking about things that, you know, things that might be, somebody might in a desperate moment find a Cheerio, that is something you should be concerned of in a pocket, because remember, pockets aren't dirty. If it would be a pocket, if it would be a Cheerio on the floor, you could leave the Cheerio on the floor, smile and wave. But if it's a Cheerio in your pocket, that's not dirty. So therefore, you should make sure you get rid of any things in pockets. Toy bins, that's a little bit tricky. It's certainly less than a kazayas. If you have something bigger than a kazayas, that's definitely a problem. It's less than a kazayas, but it's not necessarily dirty inside the bin where you have toys. If you have a Lego or Mega Bloks or Magna Tiles, or railroad tracks. So if you have chametz in there, it's not dirty. No one stepped on it. No one's trampling on it. So if it's a crumb, we're not worried about crumbs. What I do suggest, if there aren't going to be toys that are going to be played with on Pesach, it sounds like it's hard, but it's really not. Dump it in a bucket. Put in some cleanser, ammonia. Leave it there, just rinse it off, and let it dry. You don't have to put it away. Just let it dry. And the next day, take it and put it back in. If you could do that for the toys that you're going to play with on Pesach, even if there is chametz on it, it's not as hard as it sounds. That might be something to consider. If you have pets, that you definitely have to be concerned with. First of all, if they eat chametz, because pets, not only, I've been to some mechiras chametzes where there are two funny things to watch. First of all, when you see the guy buy a chain of nursing homes, want to sell a chain of 30 nursing homes to the guy, because again, it's not just the inventory of chametz that if a Jew owns a nursing home chain, it's not just that the inventory is chametz, it's also that the chametz is being served to the non-Jewish clientele. And besides the issur of owning chametz, there's a separate issur d'oraisa of getting hana'a, of deriving benefit from chametz. So if you're serving your clients chametz, that's deriving hana'a from chametz. And therefore, they have to sell not just the food in the inventory of the nursing home, they also might have to make some arrangements with the ownership of the nursing home itself, at least in the days of Pesach. It sounds complicated, right? We could work it out. But similarly, if you have a gerbil, and your gerbil only eats Wheaties, okay, I don't know what gerbils eat, but let's say you have a gerbil that only eats Wheaties. It's not just enough to, let's say, give your pet to your next-door neighbor and he'll give him the Wheaties, because your gerbil is still eating, having lunch, breakfast, and supper. In other words, you're deriving benefit from chametz on Pesach. So you actually have to sell the gerbil himself or herself to a guy. I've been to mechiras where, again, some people sold nursing home chains, other people sold gerbils. But that's in addition to selling the chametz itself. So if there is somebody who has a pet that only eats chametz, talk to the Rav when you do your mechiras chametz. That is the first half of this year, in terms of cleaning the rest of the house. Now we're going to start what I think is the little bit more serious part of the year, and that is cleaning the kitchen, which is going to be a different story. Now, the reason why it's a different story is because chametz is different than all other yisurim in the Torah in that two points. First of all, in the rest of the Torah, we have the concept of bittel. Right? A little bit of milk falls into your chalent, it's kosher. Vatel b'shishim, you have 60 times a drop of milk, 60, well more than 60 times that in the chalent, it's kosher, no problem. However, on chametz, if you would have one crumb fall into a gigantic hotel-sized pot of kosher lePesach soup, the entire soup is chametz stick. We don't use the rule of bittel on Pesach with chametz. That's one rule, one reason why chametz is different. A second reason is that when it comes to kashas during the year, when something is 24 hours old, when a flavor that's in a wall of a pot is 24 hours old, that's called pagum, tam pagum, ben yom or not ben yom. That whole halacha of ben yom or ena ben yom, we're not going to discuss it now, that leniency does not apply on Pesach. So everything is going to be a step more chamer on Pesach than everything else. Furthermore, the isser of eating chametz on Pesach is even b'mashu. You take one crumb in your mouth, that's a violation of an isser d'oraisa. So therefore, when it comes to anything that has to do with food, ingestion, kitchen, and dining room, whereas the rest of the house, I was trying to find you kulas not to have to clean those crumbs on the floor, when it comes to the kitchen and dining room, here we're going to go to the opposite extreme. We're going to try to be very extraordinary careful. So therefore, for example, let's say you go to the Seder table, and you take out that beautiful outfit that you wore at the, you love this outfit, you wore it to your so-and-so's Sheva Brachas. Well, at the Sheva Brachas, you probably had a piece of challah. And therefore, who's to say that on your lapel, or in your lapel, or in the pocket, or wherever it is, or in the, you know, it's a furry material, not furry, but a woolly material with a little bit of a texture to it, maybe there's some crumbs in there. As you lean over, one crumb falls into your food, that's an Issur d'oraisa. So when it comes to clothing that you know you're going to wear on Pesach, you should. Put it in the laundry, just washing it on a cycle with hot water and detergent, the regular wash cycle, makes it fine. But make sure you do. If something needs dry cleaning, whatever you know you're going to wear on Pesach, it is ideal to dry clean the dry clean items for Pesach that you're going to wear at the meals, or put them in the wash. At the very, 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 very least, brush it off well if there's something that you know you're going to be eating on Pesach, you're going to be wearing on Pesach at meals. Obviously, you don't know what exactly you're going to wear, but if you do have, you know, a quarter of your closet and you know that this is stuff that we're going to be wearing or might possibly be wearing, that's something that you should either make sure is clean. On Pesach, when you're picking out outfits, make sure that the stuff is recently, you know, just came out of the wash, or at least before you do wear it at a meal, it should be well brushed off to assure that there's not even that one crumb, because again, this is a whole different concern. I don't care about the crumbs on the floor, but one crumb on a jacket that falls into my food, chas v'shalom, is an issur d'oraisa. That's something that a lot of people don't think about, but it's something that is to be concerned of. When we're talking about the pockets, that you'll check for Pesach. Don't worry about it. You just make sure there's nothing serious there, a little crumb you're not worried about. But if you're worried about something on the outside of the jacket that might fall into food, it's a whole different ballgame. That is something to be concerned with. Along similar lines, any toys or books, as we mentioned before, should all ideally stay off the table. You could play with, the kids could play with them, read them, but not while you're eating. Meaning, if you like to sit on the couch and eat while you read a mishpach or a book or a novel, so on Pesach, do that, but don't eat while you're reading it. Eat separately, then read, or read, then eat, or however else you want to work it out. But don't eat with food, with books or with any toys, because, again, one crumb goes into the food, it's an issur d'oraisa. Similarly, it's a good idea that if anything falls on the floor, it's better not to put it right back on the dining room table on Pesach. Something falls on the floor, rinse it off first. Even though during the year it's not really dirty, it's nothing. Fell on the floor, you don't want to play games, it's worthwhile rinsing it off. Similarly, if a kid is driving, I don't know about your houses, but we have bicycles, tricycles, rollerblades, scooters that are driving around the dining room, keep in mind that if they go outside and the tires pick up lots of all kinds of things, crumbs and the like, so if there's going to be vehicular traffic, keep it out of the dining room and kitchen. Keep it in the living room, the den, the whatever else, the basement, not the dining room, not the kitchen on Pesach. If you, of course, have a Haggadah that you like to use, you shouldn't be using the Haggadah the rest of the year while you're eating breakfast, because you don't want to have chametz in your Haggadah. Obviously, benchers, of course, you have to be very careful. You shouldn't be using, you should have a special set of benchers. It's always good. Next time you're at a simcha, you make a simcha, take a big pile of benchers, put them aside, don't put them out, and those will be your Pesach benchers. Okay, now let's talk about different things in the house that you want to kosher and use. So, anything that's fabric, tablecloths, linens, fabric oven mitts that you actually serve and touch food with, all you have to do is put it in the washing machine with detergent, whatever might have been there was nifsal achilas kelev, was ruined even for a dog, and you kasher any fabrics with a regular cycle on hot with detergent. Yes.
Also good for dish towels.
Yes. Yes. Baby bibs you have to be a little bit more careful with, because a lot of times they're covered with a vinyl or a plastic, and you really have to scrape off. I'd be a little bit nervous. So if it's I just know from baby bibs, you want, there's sometimes physical stuff there that you want to be a little bit careful with that. But if you get off anything physical there, then you don't have to worry about it. Yes?
Does it have to be washed in hot water? Tablecloths?
Great question, because a lot of the tablecloths are delicates.
Right.
I have to check that. I don't know. I have to check that. So can you write that down, number two, to check? Yeah. No, because that's going to take care of the problem of owning chametz and not having to clean the chametz. But once it involves something that might come in contact with food, ingesting chametz, then we're much more careful. So even though it's dirty, that might not be sufficient. If I go on Pesach, remember we said you're just going to leave the crumbs in the corner, right? The crumbs underneath if you have a break front in your dining room, deep underneath that break front, you don't have to worry about those crumbs there. But that doesn't mean that on Pesach I could go reach for a crumb and put it in my mouth. That would still be an issur d'oraisa. It just means that the prohibition of owning chametz, that I don't violate if it's a dirty crumb that's less than a kazayit. But ingesting, eating it, is still going to be a problem. Chairs, we'll get to chairs. Yes, that you do have to be very careful because that's going to be in contact with, that's going to be while you're eating or your hands stick in while you're eating. That, we'll talk about that in a minute. Yeah. Totally fine. Totally fine. You could have, if there's no pieces of chametz, you could have, you cannot wash your tablecloth. If you have a plastic over, what?
Only a paste.
That's fine. You could use your tablecloth all year long. If you don't see any crumbs on it, just wipe it off, shake it out, don't even wash it. If you cover the whole dining room table with a plastic, one of those heavy plastics, that will solve any problems underneath that plastic because nothing's touching. Right. Okay. Something people don't always think about. Your cell phones, anything that you use in the kitchen, even while you eat, while you're preparing food, cell phones, home phones, doorknobs, handles, light switches. Here, there could be chametz. Now, again, one crumb gets into the food. It's an issur d'oraisa. The solution to that is take a rag with some ammonia. It doesn't have to be real ammonia. Again, like Windex. Let's have some non-healthy, let's call it poison. That's a nice word for poisonous. Windex, again, it's not so difficult to work with, and it is poison. It has ammonia in it. And rub down the light switches, the door handles to the kitchen. Door handles in general might be smart, just to run through the house quickly. Take a rag with Windex and just dash through your house in like 3 minutes, just doing each quick. This is interesting, certainly. Okay, whatever we're worried that you might touch that could be dirty, that there might be a crumb there, that's just a smart thing to do. If you have a fancy doorknob that's a little bit, you know, engraved, so just make a more saturated rag and let the ammonia sort of get in to the crevice in your engraved doorknob, and that also will be more than enough. Great.
You think like a keyboard in the last
one? If you play the keyboard or type while you're eating, that's a problem. If you do it not while you're eating, that's just crumbs, and we're not worried about, again, everything I'm talking about now. The question about using a keyboard or a laptop was in the first half of the shiur. I should have mentioned that. Laptops, we do all use our laptops. I use my laptop on Chol HaMoed. And there's, of course, an issur of chametz in Chol HaMoed. But it's not, I will not bring my laptop to the dining room or kitchen table on Chol HaMoed. But all the crumbs that fell into, if you only knew, if I had a nickel for every time a crumb fell into my keyboard, whatever. So you don't have to be worried about all the crumbs that fell into the keyboard because they're inaccessible. Are they dirty? Maybe they're not dirty, but they're inaccessible. I would. Okay, you could shake out your keyboard, turn your keyboard upside down, shake it out. Whatever comes out, great. Whatever doesn't come out, you're fine. But that's all in the rest of the house. When it comes to the dining room or the kitchen table, then you're worried even about one crumb, chas v'shalom, connecting to food, and that's something that we have to avoid. Okay? Thank you for pointing that out. Let's talk about the table. Something to keep in mind, of course, obviously we're going to cover our table, but you want to make sure that there's some kind of waterproof covering on the table, meaning you don't want it just to be a one tablecloth with another tablecloth on top, but you want there to be a waterproof covering, because let's say you put down some hot item on the tablecloth, that hot item could draw a direct line of steam from the table through the tablecloth, a direct line of moisture from the table to your food and make your pot chametz. So you want to have some barrier. It could be a waterproof cover. It could be a vinyl tablecloth underneath your nice yontif tablecloth. It could be one of those plastic, garbage, disposable tablecloths that is on the, again, underneath whatever nice tablecloth that you'll use. But if you use a piece of corrugated plastic or even cardboard, that also would be a sufficient barrier. But you want there to be some barrier to prevent a direct line of moisture between the table and whatever hot pot you might put on top of the table. We're going to the dining room right now. So let's go to the chairs, like you mentioned. Again, since you sit on chairs while you eat your Seder and other Yantif meals, your hands move around and they grab the chair. So we're worried about the crevices because, again, one crumb that gets into our food is an issur d'oraisa. So we're worried about those crevices. So if you could do the best job that you can, here we are going to say, get a toothpick, get a whatever it is, and get into those cracks and corners. Because, again, if it's in the other rooms, we couldn't care less. It's dirty, it's less than a kazayas, I'm not worried about crumbs. But in the dining room, in the kitchen, those I'm very much concerned with. If there's a crevice in the back of a chair that I can't reach, so again, just take some, again, if you have fabric upholstery, don't do this. But if it's vinyl or metal, so then you can always just spray a bit of Windex in the corners where there might be crumbs, and that covers you for whatever areas of a chair or crevices of a chair that you're not able to reach. That's as far as chairs. Obviously, a couch, I don't have to tell you how many pounds of chametz could be found behind the couch cushions, especially in people's homes like myself. So take off the cushions, vacuum, that's the best thing. A break front, that you have your chametz, beautiful chametz dishes there, so you can leave it there. You don't have to cover it over with, you know, ugly looking, paper, lining paper to cover the glass shelves and the mirrors. You don't have to do that. You can leave your beautiful chametz tikka kalim there, as long as they're clean. If they're not clean, then you have to clean them and put them away. But if they're clean, you can leave it on display and just just like you mark all the rest of your cabinets as being chametz tikka, you'll put a little piece of tape, make sure it doesn't ruin the veneer of the wood, a little tape, a little string too, that you're not going to open that display or that curio or that break front and take anything out on Pesach. The story of the Mahariel. The Mahariel was one of the Rishonim, and of course, Jews were not able to do much in medieval Europe. They weren't able to own property and do certain businesses, but that's why we all became moneylenders. So in his money lending business, he used to take collateral. So on Pesach, he had a special table in his dining room. He was one of the great Rishonim. And he would take all the silver and gold dishes that the Goyim had given him as collateral for his money lending business, and he would put it on display to feel the luxury of the aristocracy of the Cheirus, of Lel Pesach, of like B'nai Yisrael went out with all the Rechush Gadol when we left Mitzrayim. So he would also have a table. He wouldn't put on his own dining room table. It was not treif and chametz tik, but again, it's clean. The only thing that we're worried about on Pesach, again, when I cook, I have to use pots that are Pesach tik, but if I'm not touching it to the food, I'm just worried about crumbs. If the surfaces are clean, so they could be present in my house. So it's explicit in the Shulchan Aruch that the Mahariel would have this table with all these beautiful gold and silver decorative dishes that he had pawned or taken as collateral, and they were chametz tik, but they just sat there. So based on that, we see that also you can have your stuff in your break front as long as there's no crumbs on it, and leave it in your break front, and that would be okay. Okay, that's as far as the dining room. Now let's get to the kitchen itself and kashering things in the kitchen. So the Gemara Pesachim raises a question. It says, there's a conversation, Ravina asks the following question. How do you kasher a knife for Pesach? So Rav Ashi, who's actually the author, the editor of the Gemara was finished in around the year 250, the last generation of Amoraim, who composed the Gemara was Rav Ashi. And he said, well, actually, I don't kasher my knives for Pesach. I get new knives. So that raises a question. What did he mean? Did he mean he gets new knives, everything else he kashers, but knives, because there's an edge, maybe they're serrated, you can't get into the clean serration so well, maybe where the blade fits into the handle, there's a crack, it's hard to access into the crack, so that's why he gets new knives? Or no, maybe he's saying that if you could readily, easily get other things, get Pesach Tikka Kalim, which most of the time we have, you should do so. So the Gemara continues and says, yeah, I know you get new knives. What about people like me who can't afford new knives? What should I do? So from that Gemara, we see that if there is something that's easy enough, cheap enough to just get, we all have Pesach Tikka, we all have Pesach Tikka silverware, unless you have real silver that you want to kasher. So we don't kasher things so often. If we do kasher them, let's talk about that for a minute. If there are things that we're going to kasher, so kashering is to get, let me explain one point. Whenever you have something that's not kosher, there are two things to be concerned of. One is the physical pieces of non-kosher. That you get rid of just by washing it off with soap. The second thing is what you have to kasher for is that the flavor, the treif flavor that's absorbed in the walls, you have to remove it. That you're going to do with either one of two ways, either hagala or libun, which we'll speak about right now. Let's say you want to kasher, for example, one thing that a lot of people do kasher are silver kiddush cups. So silver kiddush cups, you have to take care of two issues. First of all, there can't be anything physically present on the kiddush cup. It has to be perfectly clean. So that means if you have an ornately designed kiddush cup, you're going to have to check all the cracks to make sure there are no physical things, crumbs, right? You have a kiddush cup right next to your challah. So there's definitely crumbs that touched your kiddush cup. So if it's a smooth, some of the more modern kiddush cups are more smooth, that's great. If you have a more traditional type of kiddush cup with lots of bumps and indentations, you do want to make sure you rub it with some kind of scrubber that will get all the physical things out. Then you have to get rid of the flavor in the walls of the kiddush cup. That's with Haggalah. Now, how do you do Haggalah? Four rules. First of all, what pot are you going to throw it in? What pot are you going to drop it into? It doesn't matter. You could use a chametz dikah pot. You could use a milchah dikah pot. You could use a fleishik dikah pot for everything. You could use chametz for Pesach. You could use a milchah dikah pot to kasher fleishik kelim. You could use a Pesach dikah pot to kasher milchah kelim. You could use a milchah pot to kasher parav kelim. As long as the pot and the thing that you're kashering has not been used in 24 hours, it doesn't matter what genre or what flavor pot you're using to kasher. As long as it hasn't been used in 24 hours, you could use any pot to kasher any, again, kli that hasn't been used in 24 hours, provided by the fact that there's no physical presence of any material. That always has to, you have to remove all physical material, and once you do, then wait 24 hours. Then, of course, you drop it in boiling water, 30 seconds, drop it in boiling water. Now, you want to make sure it's not just hot water. When you put a pot on to boil, you have to wait till it's a rolling boil. Bubbles, 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 bubbles. Once it's bubbles, then you drop this perfectly clean silver cup or let's say you want any other of the dishes or any other metal silverware cutlery, you're going to drop it in for 10, 20 seconds. Take it out or spill out the hot water. That's sometimes easier than sticking your hand in and burning your hand. And then the minhag is to rinse it off in cold water. Okay, so four steps. Wait 24 hours. Clean it off perfectly. Drop it in boiling water and rinse it off. And that kashers things like silverware and other metal items, and even non-metal items, we try not to kasher plastic. So if you have a spatula that you like to use, we try not to kasher plastic on Pesach. So avoid plastic. Yes?
Okay. If I have a designated kashering pot that I only use for kashering, can I use that on a pesedik burner? Or it should be on a chometz burner?
We'll talk about burners later, but yes, you could use whatever burner you want because we're not going to be worried about the burner. If you want to kasher this afternoon, let's say you didn't kasher your kitchen today. Your burners are still paying chometz. And you want to put you want to kasher whatever thing you can, you could use any pot you want on your dirty, disgusting chametz sticker burners, and that will be okay.
Okay, but let's say that this pot, I only use the kashering things, you know, bechers or something for Pesach, or the washing cup or something. Can I use that pot on my Pesach kitchen burner? A Pesach burner.
If the bottom has never, you want to make sure that, you certainly want to make sure that it's clean. You say you want to use this pot, you say you use it during the year sometimes.
No, it's only used
for Pesach.
Only used for kashering.
And you only use it on you sometimes use it before you kash the grates, sometimes use it after you kash the grates, or always after you kash the grates.
I think after I kash the grates.
So that's right.
No question.
Yeah. Yeah, if let's say you want to use a mesh bag to hold cutlery, let's say you're putting in 10 forks, and you don't want to have to, you know, just easier. So you want to put them in a way that they're very loose. You don't want to have, you know, 10 forks held together, you know, compactly dropped in, because then there won't be room for it to the boiling to get to it. So they have to be very, very loose. But yes, you can insert it with a mesh bag, yes. So polishing itself is not important. The important thing will be that there shouldn't be any particles of chametz, and also there shouldn't be any particles of anything on it. So if there's like a tarnish, I assume tarnish is just an oxidization, so you probably don't have to be worried about an oxidization. So it doesn't really matter. If you want to polish it before, it's probably better, because you'll make sure that it's really clean. Remember? Anything that you put on the table, you want to. Right. So obviously cleaned, but if you have something like a washing cup, if it's never used with heat, neither before Pesach or on Pesach, then you don't have to be worried about kashering it. You only have to clean it.
That would also apply to a napkin, silver
So silver napkin holder, I'd be nervous, because what happens if a breaded chicken fell on it during the year, and now on Pesach, a potato falls on it? And I take the potato and put it in my mouth, so the hot potato just absorbs some of the breaded chicken that it had absorbed. So I would kasher a napkin holder.
Someone mentioned something interesting with rings. That let's say you wear your ring,
you need
a hot hollow or something out of the oven, and your ring touches it, it's already transmitted that from its
Right. So if that is the case, then you, you have to ask the diamond experts in the shul, but I'm sure it won't be ruined. You could drop in a pot of boiling water if you could clean it out well enough. I don't know. Yeah, tell your husband you need a new diamond ring.
Yeah.
Because she's asking, what happens if it touches hot? If it touched hot during the year, if you
there is jewelry cleaner.
No, that won't catch it. Jewelry cleaner just takes off the surface material, and she's asking what happens if it touched something hot during the year. Which again, if you're holding a hot challah and you're holding it, with the palm of your hand, and it touches that part of the ring, and then on Pesach you're going to hold any other hot item, that could be a problem. So I don't remember the poskim speaking about rings, but I'll have to double check. If I could ask Mr. Son to write down rings, just to add. Yeah. I don't think there should be a problem with two-tone cutlery. I don't think there should be a problem, yeah. It should be fine.
I want to type with something that's new for Pesach, but I also just got a dish Purim that someone put chametz on. Can I type it at this time of year if it's a chametz thick?
100%. So all of us who got stuff for Pesach, for Purim, and our Mishlach Manos, and you want to tovel the dishes that we got for the Mishlach Manos in, so there was no heat used in them, assuming they didn't give you a used pot. They give you a new, brand new thing. Yes, it had hametz sitting in it, but there was never heat involved. So just rinse it with cold water. If you rinse it with hot water, you're going to mess it up. So rinse it with cold water, soap. So there was never any hot hametz that ever touched this. So it's kosher lePesach. Of course, you have to tovel it. So after you clean it off from whatever crumbs might be on there, then you just tovel it. Yeah. It's still, again, there's no heat involved, so as long as somebody rinses something off. If you see crumbs in your mikveh, rinse your kelim off when you leave. Yeah.
You were talking about the Sindhi, and you said to do Haggala, but I'm trying to lift the plug. You can't really do it.
Let's talk about that afterwards, because that's more specified, yeah. My machronim, I don't think ever touches hot food, so you probably just have to wash it well. If you have my machronim on the table when you're eating hot food, both during the year and on Pesach, then you'd have to kasher it, but I don't think that's usually the case.
You have a paper towel holder that's on your kitchen counter.
Right.
It's not hopefully intended to be touched, but it's
there. I'm sure it got crumbs on it all year long, so you have to clean it perfectly.
You have to...
Really perfectly.
Right. I mean, I usually just cover it.
That's even better. Great. That's even better. Okay. Obviously, the halachas of Haggala, when you do Haggala, are more complicated, and the one thing that you really, 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 really always have to be certain of, whenever you kasher something with boiling water, with Haggala, it has to be perfectly clean. If you're not sure if it's perfectly clean, you must ask a shayla. Similarly, when you tovel something, and there's glue, right, you pull off the product label, and there's a little glue there, you really have to scrub that glue before. Again, that's toveling things, which is... It's not a totally different conversation. You do have to scrub that glue off. It doesn't come off, so scrub harder. Get some steel wool. If after steel wool and Comet or Ajax, it still doesn't come off, okay, then you can tovel it with that little bit of glue. But you have to be very careful about when you tovel things with getting the glue off, and certainly when you do Haggala, it has to be perfectly, perfectly clean. Let us move on. Candlesticks. First of all, we keep our candlesticks on the mantle above the fireplace. So they don't touch chametz during the year. They don't touch chametz on Pesach. It's just like anything else in the house. I'll check and make sure there are no, Cheerios underneath my candlesticks, just like anywhere else in the house. If you keep your candlesticks on the table, so then, maker hadin, you want to, they're not touching food, they didn't touch food, you... rinse them off, clean them with some cleanser, that should be fine. But There are those who are machmir to pour boiling water on top of them because maybe something, maybe you had some knedel, some soup, the knedel, a knedel spilled on it during the year, maybe on Pesach, something hot will touch it. If you want to be extra careful, some of you might have the minhag to just, again, not to immerse it in boiling water, but to just pour boiling water on top of it. That would be sufficient for those who are machmir, but again, that's not mikur hadin. Let's talk about countertops, because I think that's probably the most discussed topic, and that's, I think, very important, because it's certainly chametz on our countertops. I have to be honest, I'm a big believer in covering your countertops. I'm not saying you have to cover it. If you have a granite countertop, I happen to be a big believer. I think it's very convenient, easy, and safest to cover it with corrugated plastic. That's just for me to say my piece. That's not halacha. That's just the easiest thing and the safest thing. For those of you who want a kasher, so first you have to ascertain that the material that your countertop is kasherable. For example, I got a shayla, somebody is renting a beautiful home for their extended family from a family that specifically built their home so they could rent it out for people in a vacation type of area. And it's quartz countertops. If you do your research, you'll find out something fascinating about quartz countertops. Quartz is 93% stone and 7% plastic. We don't kasher plastic for Pesach. Yes, the mikra hadin might be okay. The custom is we generally don't kasher plastic for Pesach. So therefore, if you have a quartz countertop, I advise you to ask the shayla not to me, or don't kasher your quartz countertop. A lot of the other granite lookalikes are also made out of some epoxies, resins, and which is a nice, a fancy way of saying plastic, or a blend of plastics and some other type of stone. Those also, typically, we don't kasher plastic for Pesach. But if you have a solid, so even shayish, what they call shayish in Eretz Yisrael, I did a little research, I found that even shayish, which means marble, even shayish in Eretz Yisrael is not pure marble, it's marble mixed with some kind of resin or epoxy to give it the smoothness, to make it a little cheaper, I guess. That also might not be kasherable by simply kashering with boiling water. So once you did confirm that your countertop is granite, let's say is granite is fine. Granite is a slab of stone. You can kasher stone. So how are we going to kasher? So let's just understand why we need to kasher it. You need to kasher a countertop or a tabletop for that matter only if hot chametz fell on it. So, if you never put, a noodle kugel directly, I mean, you put it down with aluminum foil or with a tin pan or with a baking dish, if you never put a kugel directly on the countertop, and you never spilled a noodle onto your countertop, so there's no heat that ever touched your countertop, you just have to wash it off well, and you're good to go. The problem is, over the year, you might spill some hot, hot piece of something, a hot noodle might fall onto your table, onto your countertop, onto your table. That's what we're doing the Hagala for. That's what we're kashering for. So, how do you do Hagala? The way you would do Hagala is, we'll talk about steamers, which I know is this next favorite question in a moment. The way you do Hagala is you make sure that the countertop did not come in contact with any hot chametz for 24 hours. That's always the rule whenever you kasher with Hagala, with boiling water. And then, after you do that, you boil up not one pot, not one kettle, but probably a bunch of big pots or kettles, and making sure that you don't pour the hot water on yourself, you pour the hot water, not just that it should flow on your whole countertop, but the stream of water falling from your boiling pot has to touch, that stream of water itself has to touch every inch of the table or the countertop. That takes a lot of pots and it takes a lot of time. So that's something to be aware of. If you cover it over with corrugated plastic, you don't have to worry about that. That's what I do. I don't kasher my countertops. I just cover them with plastic. Even when you do kasher with Hagala, as we just described, the seams where you have two joints, where you have a joint between a seam between two pieces of marble. Then, or granite, there could be a plastic caulking or seam there that even if you are going to kasher it and not cover it, so then you want to put some kind of mat. You could figure out your design of your kitchen, you know, setup. You could put a mat there, you could put a drain board there, you could put just a piece of tape covering that seam. That will also be sufficient. Now, on top of the countertops, this is something that a lot of people don't think about. On top of the countertops, in my kitchen, and I assume in many kitchens, there are cabinets. Now, sometimes, I'll tell you, when I have my challenge cooking, let's say I have a countertop here, I have cabinets up here, the plug is underneath the cabinets, and my challenge is plugged in right here, such that the steam from that barley is going straight up into the bottom of that cabinet. So I would advise lining the bottom of the upper cabinets, lining the bottom of it with aluminum foil. It sounds hard. The whole kitchen will probably take you no more than 8 minutes. I've done it myself. What? If there's a light, then you could use something that's trans... again, this is only the areas where you might have had a pot that had chametz in it. So if you know that there's one corner where you never have any pots, the place where you have the challen pot, definitely. The place where you put down a pot that had noodles or knedlach in it, definitely. The place where you put down a lasagna, definitely. If there's a part of your counter where you just keep pens and pencils, you don't have to. We're only worried about the concern that steam went up from your chametz to this underbelly of the upper cabinets. And then on Pesach, you're going to put a pot there, and the steam will go up and draw down the flavor of chametz from that it absorbed there. Washing won't help, because we're worried about the flavor coming out. Washing won't help there. If you are sure that you will not put a pot there on Pesach, which is a hard thing to do, to assume that you're never going to do it anywhere in your kitchen, you have to know your kitchen. I'm sure there are some sections, like right near the stove, for example, or wherever you put you do your challen, that you might be more concerned. The other parts, you're right, you might not have to be concerned. But wherever you're going to put pots that are steaming, that have steam going up, that you might, both on during the year and on Pesach, you do have to be concerned with the top level. Anyone who wouldn't use a chametz dikka microwave on Pesach should also be equally concerned. It's the same concern as a chametz dikka microwave. A non-kashered chametz dikka microwave is the same concern. Yeah.
Is there a limit to how high, let's say?
Yes. Okay. If the steam, if it's a high cabinet, you don't have to. If it's a most cabinets, if you have a pot, most cabinets about a, I don't know, foot and a half above the countertop, and a pot itself is half a foot, right? A pot itself is already 8 inches or so. So if it's a high cabinet, then you don't have to. Right. Yeah.
Are we supposed to put it underneath the cabinet, or are we talking about the backsplash behind the countertop?
Okay. I was speaking about underneath the cabinet. Backsplashes, if you ever touch things to the backsplash, you want to, you know, again, people aren't going to like me if I say you have to line the backsplashes, but I take some corrugated, again, my whole thing is corrugated plastic, so to add a little piece of corrugated plastic, you know, going up in the back, it makes, like, it's easy. What? Yeah, that's fine, if you want to, but again, that's just another thing. It's not a required mikra din, but again, if anything touches there, it should be thrown out. No, steam is going up. Steam goes up, not horizontally. It goes vertically. So you wouldn't be concerned with the horizontal movement. Yeah.
Hood on top of...
Serious problem. Hoods must be covered. Yes. In terms of ventilation hoods, you must cover, you must line the bottom of a ventilation hood. That's mikra hadin. That's a very serious thing that a lot of people don't think about. Yes, 100%. Yes, thank you. So kashering microwaves. Because most microwaves are plastic... the custom is that we don't kasher plastics for Pesach. During the year we do, but for Pesach, because of Chomer Dechametz, we usually don't kasher plastic for Pesach, and therefore the custom would be not to kasher microwaves. Meaning, if you were telling me that you were going to a hotel and you have nothing to eat except what you warm up in the microwave, we'll figure out how to do it. But if you're home, and there's only 2.5 days of Chol HaMoed that we're talking about, and you have an oven, and you're, you know, if I have a student who tells me my parents aren't religious and they don't keep Pesach and I'm going to be stuck in their house and whatever else, we'll find them a heter. But in normal circumstances, I don't think it's necessary for those to live for 2 days without 2.5 days without a microwave. I think would be the proper direction to go. Yes.
If you cover them, does it have to be a carrier?
No, as long as it's something that doesn't. No, I don't cover the. No, if you're doing the counter itself. Yes, as long as it's something that doesn't rip. So if you do tinfoil, it should be heavy-duty tinfoil.
And then the roll of plastic on a roll, the clear plastic?
If it's just like wrap, plastic wrap, that would be too thin. It would get, if it's soft. You mean like a hard plastic? Like the plastic tablecloth on roll that you get? Yes, that would be fine. Yeah. Without tinfoil under it. Yeah, that's enough. Yes. I don't know what it looks like, but I'm assuming you just have to cover it with foil. I don't know what it, I can't visualize. You can send me a picture, but I'm sure it doesn't have to be kashered. Okay, you'll send me a picture. You can send me a picture on the text message, but otherwise just cover it with aluminum foil. That's fine. Okay. Now, let's talk about steamers. So steamers, I have spoken to many rabbonim, spoken to the OU, the poskim for the OU, many poskim. Steamers are as follows. Ramosha has a true... Let me just explain what the question is. The question is, I have a countertop, and I really like my granite. I like my marble. I don't want to have to use that ugly corrugated plastic that Rabbi Orlean uses. I bought a marble kitchen so I could have a marble kitchen for Pesach, for the Cheiros. I like my marble. So let me kasher my... And to pour boiling water is such a pain. So much water all over the place, and you're going to burn your foot when the water falls down. I don't want to do that. I want to just use a steamer, one of these steamers. Now, keep in mind, steam by definition means it's 212 degrees. You can't have, unless at a different air pressure, steam less than 212. So it's just as hot as any pot of boiling water. So if I could kasher my fork by dropping in a pot of boiling water of 212 degrees, why shouldn't I be able to kasher my countertop by pouring on it, well, not water, but steam, which is equally 212 degrees? That's the logic. So Reb Moshe Feinstein said that you can kasher with steam. But let's explain. When he said that you can kasher with steam, it could be that that was only talking about a case when the original absorption was through steam. That's what I spoke to Reb Schefter about this, who's the posting for the OU, meaning, if the absorption was through steam absorbing the chametz, then that flavor of chametz could be expunged, could be expelled equally through steam to get it out. But if you're worried that I dropped a noodle, a hot noodle, on the counter, or I put down a hot piece of pizza directly on the counter, on the milchka counter, so steam wouldn't get that out. However, if... There is a way that you could kasher with steam that would suffice, even if it's not just absorption through steam, but even if it was actually hot noodle fell on your countertop. How do you do that? That is, again, to be honest, this is probably something that a kosher professional who does steaming would do, as opposed to me in my own kitchen with a steamer. It would be as follows. If you take a steamer and you put it down, now steam, again, is not hot air. It has to be hot water. 212 degree water, you take the steamer, you hold it right above the countertop, let's say a quarter inch or so, really very close, such that you're getting a film of water, of hot water, on your countertop. After that, you go over it again, a second time, on the same exact place that you did the first time, the steam that comes out the second time, which is 212 degrees, is going to boil up that water, that little film of water, that condensation that was there originally. That might be a way that the steamer could work. Meaning, you're not just letting steam kosher your countertop, you have some water, some hot water on your countertop, and the steamer itself is boiling up or heating up that water that's sitting atop your countertop. That's the second time around, covering the, again, you have hot water there from the beginning, you could just pour hot water there to start with, but that's regular Hagala. You want to avoid that. If you take a steamer and you put it down the first time, you go over a certain area one time, getting the condensation down, the moisture down on the counter. Then you come a second time and take your steamer on that same place, that 212 degree steam, the second time, is going to boil up the water that's there from the first time, and that will kasher the surface of the countertop. Now again, if you hear that there's somebody who's going around with steamers, hire him. Let him do it. Let her do it. If they know how to do it, they're doing it carefully with proper heat levels of heat. It's not the smartest thing to do it yourself unless you really know what you're doing. It's doable. It's not the easiest, and therefore you should at least think twice about doing it yourself. But certainly if somebody is going around with if you hear of a steaming service, certainly call them. They know what they're doing. that should be fine. Any questions on that? Yeah. I don't know what Korian. I have to look up and see what Korian is made out of. But you can find that online. All the kosher websites will have lists and say what Korian, if Korian is or not kosherable.
Can the steamer also be used for kitchen faucets and kitchen sinks?
No. I would not use a steamer for kitchen faucets and kitchen sinks. Now, to be honest, some of the poskim say that your countertops, the reason why some of the poskim are okay with the steamer situation is because it could be that the countertops, you don't really have to kosher at all. Why? Because chances are the place where a hot piece of Pesach Tikkun Kugel is going to fall, where they had previously fallen a hot piece of pizza, is probably not so concerning. So therefore, that's why poskim are willing to allow steaming situation. Faucets, definitely, because they're used so often in one spot, faucets you should pour, we'll talk about sinks in a minute, but faucets you should definitely pour hot water and boiling water directly onto the faucets. Yeah. Spigot.
Yeah, the spigot. Okay.
Take water from the top, take a kettle. First do the top, and then try to do a little jump, and the best you could do. Best you could do. It's good.
15 times.
But you know what? It was good the second.
What about the hose that pulls out? Because I think it might melt if you pull.
That's a great question. Never thought of it. But let's just think. The hose that you pull out, by definition, never had hot water from the spigot on it, because you didn't hook. What might have fallen? Did you ever pull it out and you pour noodle soup on top of that or chant on top of that? The best you can. The best you can. The best you can. Yeah.
What about if the faucet and the
handles?
The faucet and the spigot, they're not real metal. Plastic underneath.
You could kosher. Do the best you can. Do the best you can. If it's not metal, if it's, again, there are poskim who say something that you do the best you can. If you could cover it, that's ideal. If you can't, then again, it doesn't really touch your hot food on Pesach too often. It has to be cleaned perfectly. There can't be any pieces on it. As far as kosher, we're only worried about something hot food on Pesach will touch it. It's not so concerning. So you can pour hot water and rely on the poskim that allow koshering plastic for that concern. Yeah. I'm sorry?
I got other ones. I got a replacement.
Okay. I don't know if that's necessary, but if you can, you want to, you're welcome. That's fine. Fine. Okay. We do have to finish. With the sink, sinks do have to be koshered, of course. Porcelain sinks cannot be koshered. If you have a porcelain sink, you're welcome to talk to me afterwards. Metal sinks, the smartest way to kosher a metal sink is make sure it hasn't been used for 24 hours. Always. That has to be the rule. Make sure it's perfectly clean, like you scrubbed it with a strong scrubber. And then the best way to kosher with hot water, again, you're going to have to boil up one kettle won't do it. It's not just pour boiling water and let the water flow all over. No, it has to be the stream coming out of the pot, the boiling pot, hits every part of that sink. The best way to do it is start on the outside and move in. It's going to be very hard to move from the middle and start out. Start from the outside and move in. Around and around and around and around and around. Pick quadrants, pick quarters, that's the same thing. Pick quadrants, pick circles, consent. Whatever you do, make every point that you are koshering, get the direct flow from the pot. Fridges and freezers are easier than you think. Because they're never used with hot chametz, nor with hot kosher Pesach food, you don't have to clean them with anything hot. You just have to rub it down. And if you want to be smart, rub it down with some ammonia on a paper towel. It's not just to destroy anything that's there. Except, where do you, yes, have to be careful? In the crevices, the accordion, the gasket that surrounds the perimeter of the door, in that accordion sort of crevice, you do want to run whatever you can get out. Whatever you can't get out, take a Q-tip, stick it in Windex, run the Q-tip through that to get whatever crumbs might be there. And even if a chas v'shalom would fall into your food, it's already been ruined with that ammonia cleanser, and that wet Q-tip will help you in that sense. I also suggest that if you have removable shelves, instead of sticking your head into the fridge and scrubbing them, just take the shelves out, especially if they're slats. Because if they're slats, it's very hard to, those rods, they're very hard to get every part of the rod. Just take it, stick it in a bathtub that has some cleanser in it, and rub it in the bathtub. It will be much quicker and easier. Yes? You do not have to cover the shelves. It is wise to do it. I do, but you don't have to. Mikra Hadin, it is not required, but it is proper. It is a good thing to do because, again, we're worried about even the tiniest because you're putting food there directly. And, again, one crumb could be serious. So I do. However, if you have slats in shelving in your refrigerator or freezer, you want to not ruin your fridge or freezer by preventing the circulation, so you have to poke holes in the lots of holes to allow proper circulation inside the appliance. Yeah.
For the sink, when you say it must not be used for 20 grams, you mean for hot?
Yes, for hot.
So for
hot chametz. You can use it for cold water. You can wash it until you die. You can even wash your Cheerios and milk in cold water. Yeah. Okay. Stove grates. The easiest thing to do with stove grates is put it in your self-clean oven. You don't have to wash them at all. You don't have to scrub them. You don't have to worry about anything. They could be dirty. They could be dripping with chametz. Put it in your self-clean oven, and they will be koshered perfectly. However, it comes with a price. The shine or the luster that you bought it right when you that it had when you bought it from the store, it will lose a bit of that luster. It will turn grayish instead of, it won't be as silvery. It'll be a little more grayish. So if you're willing to forgo the appearance to save yourself the time from rubbing and koshering and turning it on high and whatever else, koshering it, then it could be worthwhile to just stick it in the self-clean cycle. Keep in mind, again, let's talk about ovens now. Anything that's put in a self-clean oven is good to go. So if you have anything at all, again, if it's plastic, it will disintegrate. Don't do that. If you have wood, it will certainly turn on fire and disintegrate. But if you have anything that's all metal, just put it in a self-clean oven and you're good to go. If you don't have a self-clean oven, speak to me and we'll talk. It's very, very late. Dishwasher.
Do you have to cover the
floor? Yes. When we talk about self-clean is because the oven reaches temperatures of 850 degrees, 900 degrees on a self-clean cycle. The door doesn't. Not only that, but we don't kasher glass. Ashkenazim don't kasher glass. The door, which has glass, is therefore not kasherable, and therefore you should put in the interior of the oven some kind of aluminum foil to cover that glass. The gasket also that surrounds the perimeter is also not, I don't know if it's kasherable. If you could figure out some way to cover it with aluminum foil, maybe that's better also. But certainly the glass door, yeah.
The knobs
on the outside, sure, if they come off, it's better to rinse them, let them soak with some ammonia or rinse them off, clean them well. If you want to cover them with aluminum foil, that's great. You're not obligated to make it out there, no. If you want to, that's great. It's nice, but you're not obligated to. Dishwashers, most people don't kosher their dishwashers. If you have a unique circumstance, you feel you must kosher your dishwasher, speak to me later and we'll see if it's doable or not doable. Barbecue grill, somebody at the shir asked me about a kosher barbecue grill. It is doable. I spoke to the OU about it. The easiest way to do it is take the grill itself, the shelf that you put the buns on or the meat on, just put it in your self-clean oven, and then line the rest, top and bottom of your grill with two levels of heavy-duty aluminum foil, and you could have a barbecue, and I told her to invite me to the barbecue on Pesach if she does it, so we'll see, yeah.
I just wanted to note that you have to be careful about self-cleaning ovens. If you do it too frequently, you're going to mess up your oven, so it shouldn't be that people are...
Right, don't. Yeah. Whenever you do a self-clean oven, put all the things that you want to self-clean in there, one cycle, and you're good. Yeah, well, yeah. You might not even need a full cycle, but yes, assume one cycle, 2 hours. Full cycle. It should be a full cycle, full self-clean cycle, yes. I'm scared to say it because it has to reach the minimum of whatever, 850 degrees. I don't know how long it takes. Whatever it is, yeah. Yes.
If you don't put the stove grates in a self-clean oven, can you just turn it on really high?
Yes, if you don't want to put stuff, the stone grate, you're talking about the grates on top. Let's talk about the stovetop,
yes.
Not the oven.
Yes.
But we're talking about the stovetop now, because right. It's different. So stovetop, what you want to do, me'ikr hadin, the stovetop does not have to be kashered. That's because the mefarshim write that whatever fell, the noodles that fell on there, got burnt right away, whatever stuff is there burnt. But we do kasher our stovetops. What you do is you turn it on high. You put a blech. It's better to put a blech on top to keep the metal, to keep the heat in. And you turn it on high for 15 minutes on the full blast. And you might not want to do all four stovetop burners at the same time because the heat from four at high could not be good for your kitchen. So do two diagonal ones. And then the other two diagonal ones, 15 minutes is sufficient with the blech on top. Even if it's a not kosher Pesach blech, that will still be okay. That would be how you would... Now, what's very important is that tray beneath the grates, that has real chametz. Real chametz. That's not just a shayla of getting into your food. That's a shayla of only chametz. It's real chametz. Noodles fall on that tray. Sometimes if you lift up the... depending on the construction of your stovetop, if you lift up the grates, there's a tray. If you could get underneath that tray, you'll find sometimes in the... Again, if it comes off, if it doesn't come off, that's fine. If it comes off, you might find underneath that tray, there's lots and lots and lots of crumbs and noodles that fell in between the where the burners meet the tray. Check and see if you have any chametz. That is very important. Yes? On the inside door of the self-cleaning oven, there's a glass window pane. Right. Ashkenazim don't kasher glass. So you should just wrap a piece of heavy-duty aluminum foil over that, and it'll you know, move around. But as you, if it extends out both sides.
I mean, the concern I've had for years is that if it wasn't, I went from a non-self-cleaning oven to a self-cleaning oven. With the self-cleaning oven, that the heat inside is such.
Right, but we don't kasher glass. Ashkenazim don't kasher glass. So. That could also be. So either way, it's better to cover the door. If you didn't, don't worry about it. I'll leave it in your house. Don't worry. But it's better to, yes, kasher. It's better to cover it over. Okay, right. Yes? Once you do what we're describing, either if you put it in the self-clean oven, definitely not. If you put it in the, if you're not. Yeah, oh, definitely. 100% yes. Underneath the grates, that tray must be covered with aluminum foil. Yes. Must, yes.
If you put the grates in the self-cleaning oven, do you still have to kasher the burners with the blech on top?
No. No. The grates are completely kasher with self-cleaning. Don't need anything else.
In an electric stovetop, the coils.
Let's talk about that's complicated. It's problematic. Let's talk about that privately.
I'm not talking about the flat. I'm talking about with coils. The regular.
Metal coils or glass top?
Not glass top.
No, the regular. Just coils.
Okay. So turn it on high till it glows red. Once it glows red, it's kashered. Right. Yes.
Is it essential that you have to put the blech on top? Can you just do two at a time?
You just want to make sure that it's not essential. It's better if you have a blech to use a blech, or maybe invert them so that they're in the fire instead of on top of the fire. You just want to make sure that they get to 450 degrees for that situation. Clean, yes, must be clean. Yeah, you should use clean. You should use clean, yes. Finishing up, if a person has a plata, platas can be used. Plata, if you turn a plata, a hot plate, plug in hot plate on high for 2 hours, let me rephrase that, clean it well. Turn it on high for 2 hours and double foil, double heavy-duty aluminum foil, that will be sufficient for use on Pesach. And finally, just some last minute getting rid of... crumbs, if you have a toaster. So, of course, empty out your toaster before Pesach, because even if you put it away with your rest of your pot, there's real chametz there. So you want to empty out your toaster. Your broom that you used to clean up all the chametz probably has chametz on it. So just be aware of that. Whatever you want to do to be intelligent about that in terms of brushing off your broom. If you had a broom to clean off your chametz, you can use that same broom in your kitchen, dining room, and then you don't want to cause problems. Your garbage cans. Garbage cans do have chametz in them, and you might want to clean your garbage cans before Pesach. Of course, the vacuum cleaner bag, certainly. And we'll just finish with one important thing. I got a shayla. Some other people might be nogea too, or family members. If anybody's a diabetic, Pesach night, Seder night, could be deadly if not done intelligently. And therefore, instead of just saying, "Oh, I'm not going to drink dal kosos or eat matzah or whatever else," or I'm celiac. Speak to a Rav and work out there are a lot of aspects that could be adjusted as far as the types of wines, as far as the level of dilution, adding water to the wines when need be. And thirdly, in terms of the amounts of wines and matzah, all these things are could be spoken to with a Rav to make it appropriate for somebody who's a celiac or somebody who's diabetic or any other health issues. So feel free to talk to me or anybody else. Any final questions before we end? This is much longer than I anticipated. Okay, so if you have any questions, I hope you have my cell phone. If not, you could get it from me. And thank you for joining us. And you should have a wonderful Simcha Dika, Cheres Dika, relaxed Chodesh Aviv, that you're happy and you can appreciate all the wonderful gifts that Hashem gave us.